Today we shall once again immerse ourselves into the forbidden and reviled history of chaotic influences throughout our galaxy. There has never been a time throughout our sordid past whereby an individual has successfully breached the realms of chaos and returned unscathed. For once you stare into the warp, it is sure to stare back into your very soul. You must remember that the dark gods care for nothing but their own power, and they will readily corrupt the minds and hearts of every living human if it means that they can gain some form of advantage over their demonic siblings. Far too often, however, these foul, warp-born entities will target a lost soul who is in a position where their eventual chaotic influence can spill out to drag others under the tainted swell of heresy. With that in mind, today we will be exploring the tale of a most heinous character whose name has been struck from all but the most ancient of Terran texts. This figure would be the Primarch of the 14th Legion, named as Mortarion, the Death Lord of Barbarus. His repugnant degeneration from a mighty son of the Emperor to becoming nothing but an abominable and oozing demon prince of Nurgle may be perceived by some as rather tragic, but make no mistake, he chose this dark path for himself, and he should receive no mercy for his loathsome actions. You must remember that he willingly joined with the arch-traitor Horus during the fabled hours of the Great Heresy, and for this most abhorrent of treacheries, he should be shown no mercy. To fully understand the story of his malign downfall, however, we must first learn of his calamitous upbringing upon the toxic and feral world of Barbarus. We will explore the world itself, seeing the intensely noxious and cragged landscape which Mortarion would soon come to call his home. Then we shall look upon the foul, mutant overlords who ruled and preyed upon the poor, outcasted human populations, who were forced to grovel and hide amidst the darkest of valleys lest the world's pollution claim them. With the pieces set, I will tell of Mortarion's arduous struggle to lead these miscreants towards salvation, and of the resulting hardships and trials he was forced to endure, before finally meeting with the Emperor of Mankind. In the years preceding the Great Crusade, where humanity reclaimed its star-spanning empire, the Emperor of Mankind formulated a genetic undertaking of such magnitude that it would shape the landscape of the galaxy for the next 10 millennia. This was his Primarch project, a venture which would provide him with 20 sons made from his own holy DNA who could carry his word and his will throughout the scattered abyssal depths of space to unite humanity under the banner of his Imperium. Unfortunately, however, the scale of this endeavor had earned the gaze of the capricious gods within the warp. Seeing an opportunity to embolden and forever empower their own demonic realms, the gods intervened and scattered the infantile demigods throughout the expanse of space, where they would land far from the reaches and influence of their guiding father. One of these destined children eventually fell through the warp to land upon an utterly toxic and noxious world known as Barbarus. This destitute planet was enveloped by a thick haze of poisonous smog, tinted to a foul and sickly yellow coloration by the light of its blazing sun. Unfortunately for its residents, however, they were never blessed with a chance to feel the baleful rays of their solar companion. The constant spewing of thick, virulent chemicals would rise higher and higher, only to coalesce into occlusive clouds within the upper atmosphere, completely blocking any amount of sunlight from reaching the world's surface. As a result of this, the planet was forever locked in a pitiful state of darkness, illuminated by only the crude equipment of the godforsaken tribesmen who called this woeful realm a home. One may think that in such dire conditions, the population of Barbaros must have been united against their shared struggle. However, this was far from the case. Instead of finding commonality between each other, the populace was broadly split into two distinct groups, which were each splintered into small tribes and clans who would war and raid each other's settlements. The first group would be the descendants of the original human settlers who had found their homes only within the deepest valleys and under mountainous crags. In these regions, the toxic fogs were far less dense, and so the meek settlers were able to form small farms and communities, barely being able to scrape by an existence within the Stygian shroud. The second group, however, were markedly unhuman, and these were known as the Overlords. There is much speculation regarding this terrible group. Some imperial scholars believe them to be a species of Xenos, whereas the mythic folklore of Barbaros claims that they were once human in their ancient past. But after consorting with the dark forces of the warp, they shifted and grew into their new twisted forms. Standing at around thrice the height of a human, they were true giants, and despite their rather haggard and gaunt appearance, their imposing and powerful frames would prove to be far too great of an opponent for any destitute human to fell. These mutants held utter dominion over their world, having wrangled control of the malnourished humans and even over death itself. They were known to be masters of necromantic lore, and through their dark, forbidden sciences, they could resurrect and stick together whatever human corpses they could recover to create all manner of despicable and wretched creatures. Out in the fog, the ramshackle beasts of necromancy would stalk and roam the craggy landscape. Under the nightmarish gloam, they would hunt the few human camps which remained, stealing away dozens of once vibrant souls, all of whom would soon be used for further sordid experimentations. The overlords were grouped into tribes, each led by a vile warlord who would lead his warp-tainted and deathly creations into battle against whoever could be found within the smog. It was not uncommon for the overlords to wage war against one another in order to uplift their own position of power across the world. But there was one who stood supreme over the rest of his kin. The Charnel Lord, known as Nekere, was infamously known across Barbaros as being the greatest of all warlords, and for any who found themselves within his gaze, then their deaths would be all too quick to follow. If the infant Mortarion had been found by the humble farmers, perhaps this story would have unfurled differently. But unfortunately, it was a terrible overlord who plucked the child from out of the dirt. The young babe had landed amidst the aftermath of an astoundingly bloody raid, orchestrated by Nekere against a large human settlement. The oppressive and deafening silence of the freshly exterminated village was only cut by a single piercing sound, a child's cry. The agonized wails from the abandoned baby echoed out across the toxic wastes, and this sound was nothing short of captivating to Nekere. Any other child would have succumbed to the noxious and polluted clouds, so how could this one have remained alive despite it all? Though their species held utter dominion over this world, their kind was struck with a terrible affliction. Even with all of his powers, the Overlord was cursed to never sire his own children. He may have ascended to being a Lord of Death, but creating life was simply beyond his means. As a result of this, he saw the child as a prize which should be saved and nurtured. Nekere pulled the pale infant from out amidst the festering remains of the battlefield, and named him as Mortarion, the Child of Death. He ultimately intended for the young child to stand as his heir apparent, but before he could be trusted to rule over anything, Nekere had to be sure that his new son would be able to endure the trials of Barbaros. As such, he proceeded to force Mortarion to struggle through a series of cruel and terrible tests, all of which were so dire that a typical human could never hope to survive. His new home was constructed in the fashion of a prison, high up in the mountaintops, where the intensely polluted clouds would strain even his divine constitution to its very limits. His adoptive father, however, quickly learned of Mortarion's limits towards enduring the fog. Atop the tallest of mountain peaks, the levels of pollution were so high that not even the young Primarch's supernatural vitality could save him. And so Nakare relocated his own personal fortress into the occlusive fog, hoping that it would keep him safe if his son ever decided to turn upon him. Despite now living in a polluted jail of iron, Mortarion simply grew harder and more resilient to the conditions. The only other living soul he communed with was Nekere, who would descend to teach the child of the brutal arts of war and of how to best command your subservient forces to enact your every directive. Most importantly, however, he began to feed Mortarion with the forbidden secrets of Barbaran necromancy and even of the esoteric arcana, which seemed to exist beyond our own realm of reality. As the child of death grew into adolescence, he continued to voraciously tear into any scraps of scholarly text he could find at a rate which was soon becoming worrying to Nekere. The child was to be his successor, not his adversary, and so did the first seeds of doubt appear within his mind. Nevertheless, with Mortarion having grown into a capable and formidable warrior, it was high time for the heir apparent to step into his first tests of battle. Nekere took him on raids against other rival warlords, and with his new giant son at his side, they reaped a bloody harvest against any who stood against them. Truly, Mortarion had become an incredibly capable figure, despite being forced to call this calamitous and deathly world a home. But with his growing intellect came new questions. Even with his presumed future of becoming a warlord, Mortarion had become enamored by a curious sight from deep within the valleys below his tall fortress. He saw figures clamoring around dying fires, decrepit farmsteads and abandoned homes, all of which were continuously raided by the necrotic overlords who he served. His curiosity over these pallid life forms was halted by the zealous watch of Nekere, who barred his adoptive son from ever leaving his prison fortress and threatened him with new punishments should he ever attempt to waste his time on learning of the pitiful fodder who dwelled deeper within the dark. This, however, became a point of fascination to the young heir, and it ultimately proved to be too captivating of a subject for him to ignore. Mortarion was not ignorant to the fact that he was different from the overlords who surrounded him. They stood as something similar to a resurrected corpse, whereas he himself was far sturdier and in some ways far more similar to the strange figures he saw in the valleys. In a desperate quest for knowledge, Mortarion escaped his fortress home under the blanket of eternal night, where he slipped into the thick layers of smog, aiming to finally reach those intriguing humanoid communities. This betrayal of trust was not taken well by his adoptive father, however. Upon learning of his escape, Nekere bellowed out into the dark that if Mortarion ever dared to return, that he would be killed like the traitorous dog he was. These threats, however, would soon prove to be rather futile when faced with that which was soon to arrive on Barbaros. During his descent, Mortarion delved deeper and deeper through the smog, passing crumbling ruins and toxin-filled pools of putrescent, acidic rainwater. Eventually, however, he reached the deepest of canyons and finally looked upon the faces of those who had captivated his every waking moment. In but an instant, he saw himself standing with men and women who resembled himself, albeit slightly smaller than that of his own frame. Despite his own fascination and perceived kinship that he felt towards the human settlers, they did not view him in the same manner. They were initially horrified of this towering beast, clad in flesh as pale as a desiccated corpse, and with eyes so black that they could feel his nightmarish gaze clawing at their very souls. As such, they drove out and outcast the abandoned Primarch, thinking of him as but another overlord who would steal away their children for foul experimentations. Mortarion, however, could not be dissuaded so easily. In his heart, he knew that these farmers were his kin, and so he vowed to aid them in whatever capacity he could against the terrible reaches of the overlords. The initial distrust they felt towards him soon fell away as Mortarion tirelessly toiled away within the fields, harvesting whatever crops he could and erecting huge palisades to protect the villagers from the beasts out in the dark. These efforts, however, were soon dwarfed by his following actions. Within the abyssal shroud of night, an overlord led his armies of the dead to claim this village as their prize. The humans could do little to effectively defend themselves. They wielded broken tools of wrought iron, which could scarcely scratch the advanced armor worn by an overlord. Thankfully, however, they were not forced to fight alone. Mortarion, wielding a gigantic scythe, rushed into battle to defend his people. He carved his way through the ranks of necromantic constructs before finally beheading the nefarious overlord, making it the first to have been killed by humankind. This action utterly cemented Mortarion as a true ally to the farming community, who could now no longer doubt that he was to be their savior. The tribal elders, now swayed by his actions, told him about the truth of life upon Barbarus, and of how the overlords would hunt the surviving humans to be used in their strange and foul rituals. Utterly disgusted by what he heard, Mortarion pledged himself to the forlorn settlement, where he vowed to free them from the oppressive yoke of his father's rule. He promised that he would lead the humans of Barbarus to victory against the overlords, so long as they trusted him with the mantle of leadership. The tribe, whilst initially wary about an open war, were compelled to agree after witnessing his heroic actions during the prior battle. As such, the young demigod quickly set about his plan of making the tribe ready for what was sure to be a terminable conflict with the oppressive warlords. He chose the strongest and most capable of tribal members to become his warriors, whilst the remaining workers would man the forges to produce arms and armor for his new army. Word quickly spread across the region of this mysterious giant, who had promised salvation to the forlorn humans within their valleys, leading to more recruits eagerly flocking to Mortarion's cause, being ready to join in the coming revolution. It was here that Mortarion named his burgeoning army as his Death Guard. The armorers and forge masters had produced sublime suits of thick, durable armor with encapsulated rebreather systems, which allowed the new warriors to fight ever higher amidst the polluted clouds. With their new equipment, Mortarion led his people on a brutal campaign across the world of Barbarus, slaying countless overlords and bringing new human tribes under his own fold. Eventually, after years of fighting, Mortarion had scoured the tainted presence of the overlords from all but one region, and that would be from his old home. The final lording mutant left standing was Necere, the greatest of his kind, who resided in a fortress so high up in the clouds that none could be sure of surviving even the air itself. With that in mind, Mortarion found himself utterly consumed by doubts. Though his army had been successful in their battles, could he really be sure that they would be able to claim the imposing fortress? Or would he simply be damning his newfound human companions to a sure death at the hands of his adoptive father? He was eventually persuaded to call off the assault by one of his warriors, Callus Typhon, who advised Mortarion to not proceed unless he was absolutely sure that a victory could be reached. After a short period of saddened reflection on his situation, Mortarion returned to the village only to hear that the humans who he had promised to save were now speaking of a new stranger who had given them hope of salvation through a different means. Angered by this interference, he stormed through the village grounds until he finally found the mysterious stranger conversing with the elders of his village. Skipping over any introductions, Mortarion proclaimed that they were poised to snatch victory from the oppressive warlords and that the aid of any outsiders was not welcome to their cause. Quietly and calmly, the stranger explained his position, in that he also wished for Barbarus to be free from the rule of the warlords, but that the humans had a duty to swear fealty to the Imperium of Man as a faithful world to all mankind. He went on to recount that the elders had informed him that the final bastion of oppressive rule was appearing to be too great of a challenge to overcome. As such, the stranger offered his own armies to aid them in this final assault, promising them that he would grant them their ultimate victory against the Charnel Lords. Mortarion, however, was utterly disgusted and enraged at the concept of having his own victory stolen from him at the final moment by an outsider, and it soon seemed that the two may come to blows over this argument. Seeing the futility in conversation, the stranger decided to offer Mortarion with a simple challenge. He promised that if the Pale Warrior could ascend the mountain and defeat the final overlord alone, then he would leave Barbarus and never return. However, if he was unsuccessful and failed in this quest, then the stranger's forces would ascend to finish the job themselves, and that if Mortarion survived, he would be forced to bend the knee to the Imperium and swear loyalty to the stranger as his lord. With his heart burning with rage at such a proposition, Mortarion took up his arms and departed the village, intent on finally ending the rule of Nekare once and for all. Mortarion climbed the bare mountainous face for days, dragging himself higher and higher into the dense clouds of toxic polluted smog. As he ascended, the increasingly noxious fumes began to corrode and eat through his rebreather system, and it wasn't long before he began to feel the foul gases clawing into his own lungs. Despite it all, he continued his climb, driven by his maddened obsession with proving the mysterious stranger below him as wrong. As he finally reached the mountainous peak, even his thick armor had started to corrode and fall away, leaving parts of his skin exposed to the raw and lethal atmosphere. Gasping for virulent air, Mortarion stood himself up and looked upon the gates of the fortress which he once called a home. With a rasping bellow, he called out for Nekare to emerge and face him as a man in single combat. But even as a demigod, Mortarion was still a human, and the pestilent fumes were simply too much for him to bear. He fell to his knees, feeling his very soul being consumed by the rot around him. And as he drifted in and out of consciousness, he looked up to see Nekare striding out of his fortress towards him. The overlord silently marched out onto the rocky landscape, wielding a blade which would soon find its home within his adopted son's corroded and rapidly degrading throat. Nevertheless, Mortarion, looking at what he believed to be his final sight, saw not his own death, but the fated intervention of a stranger. He saw the mysterious figure stepping forth from the shrouded fog as a blinding light, and with a single stroke of his blazing sword, he saw Nekare fall to the ground, killed by the cursed and unwelcomed outsider. Seeing his failure cemented before him, Mortarion collapsed to the ground, with his weakened hold on life finally giving out, leaving him in an abyssal state of unconsciousness. This, however, was not to be his end. Days after, the young lord finally awoke from his comatose state, only to find himself back in the village, with the stranger sitting by his side. The mysterious figure informed him of what had transpired, and told of how he saved his life by carrying his broken and poisoned body back down from the toxic mountaintop to the village grounds. The stranger then reminded him of the terms of their challenge. With his failings, Barbarus would be forced to cede its newfound freedom to servitude within the Imperium, a fate which it would never likely be freed from peacefully. Bitterly, Mortarion rose from his bed and bent the knee to the stranger, ultimately remaining faithful to the promise he made to the mysterious figure, even if it pained him to do so. It was here, at this time, that the stranger finally dropped his facade. Looming over him as a giant, the imposing outsider finally revealed his true nature to the broken and failed savior of Barbarus. He was the God Emperor of all mankind, and Lord over the Imperium of Man, to which Mortarion was now utterly pledged to for the rest of his days. Ever a being who was filled with secrets, the Emperor proceeded to speak of Mortarion himself, where he revealed the truth behind his supernatural abilities, which clearly set him apart from the rest of the human tribesmen. He was a Primarch, one of 20 children, who would guide humanity through the stars as its generals and ultimate rulers. Furthermore, as a Primarch, Mortarion was to take on the mantle of leadership over an entire legion of the Emperor's own Astartes warriors, who went by the name of the Dusk Raiders. He was told of how the Marines were formed from his own genetic material, and that they would unflinchingly follow in his every directive. The only caveat given was that Mortarion must fulfill his pledge towards the Imperium. He would be permitted to act in any way he deemed appropriate, so long as his efforts were solely focused on expanding the great fold of humanity by uniting the known worlds and stars of our galaxy under a unified banner. Mortarion, upon hearing of his destined role within the Emperor's ambitious symphony, collected himself and honored his agreement by joining as the head of the 14th Legion. Despite this lofty position, however, his mind was utterly and relentlessly captivated with the old thoughts of Barbarus. He had been robbed of his only chance to save the humans who had trusted him to lead them to victory, and worse still, he could never turn back time to gain vengeance over his late adopted father. Mortarion suddenly found himself thrust into a situation with peculiar similarities to his old life. He had a new father figure who held absolute dominion over him, and Barbarus was locked into a servile state towards masters who would gladly exploit its poor denizens. Seeing nothing but bitter failings before him, these feelings of ineptitude and the vicious desire to seek vengeance eventually seeped into his very soul, and his judgment would be forever tainted. Soon after taking command of the Dusk Raiders, Mortarion stripped them of any and all pre-existing iconography, choosing to rename them to that of the Death Guard. Any cultural or inherited characteristics from their prior days were burnt away and killed, leaving the newly named Legion to rise from the ashes as a relentless and uncaring force. The Death Guard were remorseless in their early campaigns, resulting in the forceful subjugation of countless worlds, all of whom felt the full brunt of pallid steel forcing them into compliance. In addition to being rather wasteful in saving the lives of humans upon their captured worlds, Mortarion became infamous for leading his legion through huge battles of attrition, where he would readily see thousands of his own Astartes die if it granted him a victory. This resulted in a desperate need for new recruits, and the only planet which was permitted to supply the Death Guard with aspirant members was to be Barbarus. Perhaps as a sickening plan, Mortarion saw around 2/3 of his legion killed, only for them to be replaced by the natives of Barbarus. It would not be until the first fated salvos of the Horus Heresy upon the stained battlegrounds of Istvan that he could finally fulfill his desire to purge the legion of the rest of their Terran recruits. But that is to be a story for another day. The actions of Mortarion resulted in the warriors of the Death Guard being incredibly durable and shockingly resistant to harsh conditions. Their recruitment populace had endured generation after generation of life upon one of the most inhospitable planets found across the galaxy, and their brutal campaigns only strengthened their already insurmountable resolve. With the Dusk Raiders having been reformed and refitted into the Death Guard, the Legion proceeded to rejoin with the Great Crusade, where they cut a careless and bloody swathe throughout the stars, caring only for victory and nothing else. This shall bring an end to our tale of the origins of Mortarion and the Death Guard. We can only speculate as to how his story may have played out differently if he was successful in defeating Nekari himself, but fate had other intentions for him that day. I shall soon return to tell of the remaining chapters of Mortarion's sordid tale. We all know of his eventual betrayal of both the Emperor and of the Imperium, but we shall soon delve into the forbidden secrets as to why he chose to join with the Horus Heresy and whether or not he was manipulated by a most treacherous yet trusted figure.